Hello, Puppet. It's the Philosopher's Stone podcast. Sorry.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah. That's what, yeah, you know.
Disney's last big hit.
Well, that's coming back. They're making a new one, apparently. They're making more, yeah.
Not with Johnny Depp, though, right? No Johnny Depp. Yeah.
I heard it's the girl from, have you seen the show The Bear?
Amber Heard?
No. You know the show The Bear about the restaurant?
Yes. I have not seen it, but I know of it.
Oh, it's one of the actresses in there that I did not find. She was fine, but I could not imagine her in a lead role. Actually, she wasn't fine. I found her acting annoying. She was her character. Maybe it was just her character that was annoying, but
not fine. She was terrible, actually.
Well, I think that her acting was fine, but whoever wrote her character, like the way she spoke was so over the top awkward, where it was just like, just fucking spit it out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was all like, yeah, it was just like, I didn't like how her character was written, or if it was her acting, if she was making those choices, then I don't want to see her in a lead role. That's for goddamn sure. But I don't even know if that's true. So
I think an awkward pirate could be pretty funny. We haven't seen that, I don't think.
An awkward pirate?
Yeah, I mean, like a socially awkward pirate.
Johnny Depp was pretty awkward.
No, he was smooth. He thought he was smooth, but he wasn't awkward. He was just weird and eccentric.
That's true. Okay. He was kind of suave.
Yeah, he was suave.
He had game. A lot of people were slicking off to Johnny Depp after that series came out. Me included. It was the mascara. It was enough for me to think he was a woman. Wow. Just
the
kidding.
The beard always let me know.
Just a little joke there. you forgot I had those sound drops, did you?
You were waiting for the opportune moment.
I create moments. That's the thing. I don't wait for moments to come to me. Anyways, I'm a bit hungover today. I'm not used to, I have, my drinking has dialed way back since, I guess it's public knowledge now. My wonderful wife, Chelsea Strauss, is with child. So, she was my number one drinking partner, and now, so I haven't been drinking. And then we had a boys' night last night. Some of the boys, the high school friend group, came out to, these are the guys I've known for years and years and years, came out to comedy. They showed up hammered.
Of course.
Expected. One of them, I'm going to let you guess who this is, Sam. One of them ordered a poutine with double curds, ate it, immediately ordered the same thing again. So that's, you're keeping track. That's four times curds, two times poutine.
Little Miss Muffet. I know who that was. Yeah. I know.
Yes. Even their server was like, I don't know if I should do this for you. It's like her servant.
That should be illegal. That should be illegal. Two poutines back to back. That should be illegal.
Apparently she asked him if his heart would be okay. And he said, yes. But anyways, it was a fun show. They didn't ruin the show or anything, which is
great. That's
They're
fantastic.
A good audience. They were well-behaved, even though they were absolutely not being well-behaved when I first got there, but whatever. And then we all went out to the casino, and that's when my drinking really started. And then I bet all the money I made on the comedy show that night on black, on roulette.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
Yeah. Anyway,
all of it on black, not like some of it hedging.
No,
on red. Oh my god, all I don't even gamble, baby. And I know that's stupid.
What are you talking about? That's what all the cool movies do.
Coin toss. Okay.
Yeah, that's what it is. I felt like James Bond, but I did not win, so that money's gone.
James Bond gambles with taxpayer dollars. He's
never
funded by MI6. They give him money to go gamble. He's not.
That's a great point, actually. I didn't even think about that. Anyways, it was comedy money, so it kind of felt like free money. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
It's like I would have done that shit for free anyways. I know I got to stop thinking like that if I want to be ever move into the professional realm.
Hmm.
Just because it's fun doesn't mean you should be doing it for nothing.
Exactly. The Joker.
Yeah, that's what he said, right? The Joker said that?
Yeah, if you're good at something, never do it for free.
Big update in our city, my city anyways. Your city maybe, Sam. Are you going to move back?
Potentially.
Potentially. Yeah.
Well, BC for sure. It all depends on the job market.
Okay. But I don't know if this pertains for all of BC, but definitely pertains to our city. Now, if you've been a longtime listener of this podcast, you might have remembered a certain period of time a couple years back where my yard was being infested by what are called tree of heavens. Do you remember me talking about this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I used to have to deal with those in
landscaping. Oh, yeah. It was a nightmare. It was literally haunting my dreams. These fucking trees, these plants were just everywhere and they were super invasive, hard to get rid of. They stunk. And once they grow a certain size, they'll come back every year, no matter what. So like I poured gasoline on the stumps after I cut them and they still grew back. Yeah. Which isn't legal, but I was desperate. Anyways, my city has finally decreed these plants as an invasive species and you can be ordered to have them removed. I don't know if you have to remove them, but they can be ordered to be removed from properties now, private properties.
Wow. The war on trees.
Yes, tree of heavens, your time is nigh. Your time is up, bud. So my backyard, my neighbors behind us have two full-grown ones in their yard. Oh, so I don't know. Would it be a bad maneuver if I fucking called the city on them? Be like, get them out of here. Get these goddamn trees out of here.
Because that is a great way to get your neighbors to start tensions.
I don't care. I love tension. You know what's starting tension is their tree of heaven is dropping its seeds into my yard, and now I'm getting sprouts coming up already.
That's bad.
Yeah.
And if, not so, if it's an invasive species, that's bad for your property value.
Exactly. Once you notice them, you see them fucking everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's actually just they disgust. I'm physically repulsed when I see a big bunch of them together at this point.
Damn.
Yeah.
Well, I would suggest approaching your neighbors first and then calling the city after you approach
them. Yeah, maybe. Or I do an anonymous call.
Because you've got to live next to them for
years. Here's my strategy. I'm going to call the city on them. I'm not going to tell them. They're not going to know it was me. And then when they are out there starting to take it down, I'm going to go out and be like, what the heck? What the heck are you guys? Did someone? Are you guys being forced? I mean, I can't believe they're making you take these down. That is, wow. Nothing you can do about it, though.
Government in our backyard. Yeah. God damn it.
Those bastards. Those rat bastards. Who called? Do you know who it was? I'll find them. I'll route them out. That's what I'll do.
That sounds like a good way to disguise your actions. I would do that plan, actually. Okay. That sounds good.
All right. It's done. Consider it done. Next week we'll do a live phone call to the city. yes. So went to the casino, drank expensive liquor, and by expensive liquor, I don't mean the liquor was high quality. I mean, a Corona cost $8.
Nice. The house always wins.
Yeah. Woke up around 4 a.m. in a real panic, real anxiety, a little alcohol induced anxiety attack.
Those are fun.
Yeah. And then got woken up by my grandpa needing me to help him lift a giant piece of equipment into the backyard. So that was great. Took a long time and it was heavy and I was sweaty and I was hungover and I was almost throwing up the whole time. And then the boys came over after that. Started feeding me more beers. So I'm like 2 beers in right now.
Fantastic.
They wanted to be on the podcast. That's where they're at right now. They're trying to get on the podcast. So that logistically won't work. And also it'll be a terrible episode.
Yeah, we don't have enough microphones.
No. Well, they just wanted to be like the fucking, what do you call it? What's the heckler in the background? There's a peanut gallery. That's what it was. They wanted to be the peanut gallery. But I said I already barely can follow what Sam's talking about, so this is not going to be good. Anyways, I think they're coming back after this episode.
Nice.
Another thing. After our episode on Stoicism, I saw a bust of Marcus Aurelius on Marketplace, on the Facebook Marketplace. So it is now currently sitting on my desk. I'm staring Marcus Aurelius right in the face.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What's he saying?
He's saying, bust, I barely have any titties. That's what he's saying.
That is true. The busts are famously just the head, not the titties.
Well, it's weird. Can actually see.
Makes no sense when you think about it.
It cuts off around his titties here, like just below his tits, I would say. Oh, so you get some shoulder action. Now, the ad made it seem a lot bigger than it actually is. And I found out the guy just fucking 3D printed it. And I paid way too much money
for it. Original, it's not the original bust of Marcus Aurelius?
It's not the marble bust taken from the Pantheon.
Are you kidding me?
But it's hollow. I thought it was going to be heavy at least. And I was like, well, I have a 3D printer. I could have just fucking printed this thing. But I wasn't about to argue with a stranger in a parking lot about Marcus Aurelius.
The bust of Marcus Aurelius.
But goddammit, I paid way too much for this fucking piece of garbage. But anyways, it's now on my desk and I look to him for inspiration.
Oh, that's amazing you mention Marcus Aurelius, because today's subject is another Roman.
Oh.
Another famous Roman.
Nero?
No, not Nero. Although that would be a good episode as well.
We should do an episode on Nero.
Yeah, but this is he was a Roman poet who wrote a philosophical poem, and his name was Lucretius.
Lucretius?
Lucretius. Have you ever heard
Luke,
of him?
Or Lucretius.
Lucretius? No, this is Lucretius, one word. Titus Lucretius Carus.
Oh, Titus is such a cool name.
Tight ass.
Tight ass. You know what's a great name? Is the guy who owned Maximus in Gladiator, Proximo.
Oh, yeah, Proximo, yeah.
So good. Proximo. Okay, go ahead. Stop letting me interrupt you. God damn it.
Lucretius wrote a 6-book poem called De Rerum Natura, which is translated to the nature of things or the nature of the universe.
Hmm.
And this is actually, Lucretius is where we get all of our knowledge of the philosopher Epicurus.
See, that's, I know that name because of, isn't there some sort of weird incest theory with him? Epicurean complex?
Oedipus complex.
Oh, Oedipus. Okay, never mind. My bad, bro. I'm doing him dirty here.
No, Epicurus, we actually did an episode on Epicurus, but we're going to do it again because Lucretius gives such a better treatment of it. So it actually makes sense a bit more with Lucretius.
All right, Lucretius, Secretius, Lucretius.
And Epicurus was Greek, but Lucretius was Roman. So that's like the big difference between them. But there's 6 books in this poem, and we'll just run through the titles for all 6.
I encountered a Roman man recently.
Oh, really?
At the Italian restaurant downtown Kelowna. Super overrated. It was actually really annoying when he was the owner and he kept on coming up to try and talk, like ask us about the food. And like, he interrupted our conversation probably 6 times while we were eating at this restaurant. And it was very average pasta at best.
Oh.
So that's my view. That's why I kind of know why people hated the Romans now. If there were anything like this guy, just budging in.
Okay, well, to be fair, the ancient Romans, very different from modern Italians, I would wager.
You think so?
I would think so.
Okay.
Partly due to their beliefs, but... So
well, this guy certainly was invading my territory, so there's a similar on that.
Yeah, good point. So the whole point of Lucretius's goal with this poem, and kind of like Epicurus's goal, is it's to correct what he thinks is the root of all people's problems.
Okay.
And basically he thinks all people's problems are that religion is wrong because the gods are not in control of our fate.
I fuck with that.
Yeah. And they also don't really care about our lives at all. They're not interested in us. And he thinks the whole problem is people follow religion where they think God cares about them, but the opposite is true. God doesn't give a flying fart about you.
I like this guy. I like where he's going with this. If I had to guess, that would be kind of how I would think. If I knew for a fact there were gods and that's all I knew is that they existed, I would probably assume they don't really take heed of our problems.
Yeah, they got bigger fish to fry. And
yes, that one time I brought it this, I bring this up all the time, but that one crazy LSD trip I had on the river where I thought I was in the realm of the gods. The one thing that was very clear to me is that they did not give a shit about me being there.
No, and indeed, you'd be slain just if their robes were to like swash and hit
That's
you by
exactly, exactly how I felt. I knew I wasn't supposed to be in their realm, and there was multiple of them, and they didn't care I was there or just didn't know I was there. But I had a very, there was a real sense of me not mattering.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And that's, for you, that trip was a horrific nightmare experience.
I don't know if it was a horrific nightmare. It was super, super intense. That I would say that it was more like the intensity was so profound that I didn't have any room for an opinion. There was no room left in my brain to have a, is this good or bad? It was, that's how intense it was.
Wow. Well, that is like precisely sort of what Epicurus and Lucretius argue, is that the gods just don't care about us. And they think that once you understand that, you'll be much better off. And that in order to understand that, you need to start at the very basics of physics. And through physics, you can actually arrive at the proper religion.
All right.
It's a very interesting idea.
I'm liking it so far.
Yeah. And I've been thinking about this, like, do we need religion to survive as a species? Because you see it, it's ubiquitous everywhere. It's only now that people are openly atheists, I guess.
My view is that once science was developed to a certain point, it was no longer necessary. But I've heard other people argue against that. But to me, religion was just a placeholder for when something more, a more complete theory of reality arrived, which to me is science.
Yeah, that's like an interesting thing. Religion as a placeholder for science, because you do see a lot like primitive religions. Like for example, in Dune, the Fremen have a primitive religion, but it's baked into the movie that they would not have survived on the planet without the religion. Like they need this religion to survive. But the way the religion helps them survive isn't just like through faith. It's also, it gives them like a sense of certain things are sacred. Like water is sacred. You have to treat water with the utmost respect. And that cultural practice helps them survive because they need to treat water as sacred to survive. If you're an idiot with water in the desert, you die.
But so their whole religion, science would have told them the same thing.
Science doesn't tell you what you should or shouldn't do. It just tells you what is the case. Religion can tell you what you should or shouldn't do, and it can make it a matter of the sacred and the profane.
Wouldn't you think that by simply living on a planet where water is that scarce, it would automatically become a very valued resource to a point where it nearly reached a level of like reverence?
Yeah. And it could be that it only, if it could be that like you need to revere it, right? That's where the religion comes in. You need to have a capacity to treat something as sacred. And that's almost like a religious faculty, kind of.
I suppose the one place science is weak is kind of dictating a sense of morality.
Yeah.
Because basically, you could break it down to what's good for your species is probably going to line up pretty good with what is viewed as morally just. Right? Like things like murder and rape and thieving and all the shit that is, you know, against the Bible or against most religions is probably there because those things that when they run rampant are really bad for the survival of the species.
Yeah, exactly. And it seems like religion has the power to make people respect those things.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense. But anyway, so here are these are the six topics that he goes through. And I'll quote here from the Stanford Encyclopedia by Simon Trepanier. And here's the six topics. Number one, atoms and void are the sole permanent entities. So what does that mean?
Well, it's something and nothing, right?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, pretty much. Epicurus was an atomist, and that means what they wanted to figure out is like, what is there? And they found that one principle is that eventually you can, it seems like you can divide everything. But at a certain point, there must be something that you can't divide any further.
Yeah. I mean, that it does go to reason that there has to be an ultimate, like, bottom of the barrel particle or something, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And so that's like the first basic one. Then the second one, they have atomic motion and atomic shapes, the properties of compounds. The third, then they move to the nature and mortality of the soul, curing the fear of death. And then after that, in the fourth one, they have the activities of the soul, sensation and thought, volition, dreams, and emotions. And then in the fifth book, Lucretius explains our world, cosmology, origins of life, history of civilization. And then finally, in the last book, he explains meteorological and terrestrial phenomena. So like the weather and stuff like that.
Have you read any of these books?
Not in full, but like I've read enough of them that we can talk about each book in a little detail.
All right. So far, I'm on board with this guy.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the first one. Book one. So this is Atoms and Void, Foundational Principles. So this is the first idea from Lucretius, and this is the quote. Lucretius looks at nature and he notes nothing comes from nothing and nothing can be reduced to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that seems to make sense. Everything in nature, like fire, has to come from, it doesn't just appear. You have to rub some sticks together.
Yeah.
They had this weird, this I think also crops up in here, but they didn't know where flies came from.
Like houseflies?
Yeah, like houseflies. They didn't know what caused them. They actually believed that they spontaneously generated out of like meat, rotting meat and stuff like that.
They spawned from rot?
Yeah, they had no idea about like eggs or the life cycle of flies or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
but they knew flies don't just like appear out of nothing. They would think, oh, they spawn from the meat somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't like, they're not really, they don't really have science, but they have this principle that they've sort of observed that nothing comes from nothing.
They're onto something.
And then the second point is nothing can be reduced to nothing, which is, again, you know, that you can never make something disappear.
Right. That's the conservation of energy, essentially, or what was it? The thermodynamic law of, you can't destroy matter. Oh, you can only change matter. It.
Yeah, matter can be neither created nor destroyed.
Right. It only changes states.
Yes.
Kind of what they're going after. Like you can't just, something can't just come out of nothing. It has to change. Because like you could, they'd be like, okay, well, I burned this log and now at the end it's just a tiny bit of carbon. So where did the rest of the log go? And then, you know, it dissipated as heat and light and smoke, I suppose.
Earth, air,
everything that made up the log is still exists in the world. It's just changed state.
Yep. E equals mc squared.
That's exactly what I said. Okay. That's, I've been talking about E before I even heard about Einstein. I was talking about that.
Hell yeah. All right. So that's the first sort of principle. And so he makes the case that the universe is just two things, atoms and void. And atoms build up into bigger bodies, but that's basically the gist of it. And you need void for motion, because you can't have motion unless there is space between things.
Right. You need the empty space to travel through.
Right. He also has an interesting point that he makes the point that something that you can't detect can nevertheless have an impact on your senses.
Okay.
And the way he shows that is none of your senses can't detect the what he calls the quote proper sensibles of the other senses. Right? So your eyes cannot see sound. But sound can still have an effect on you, even if you can't see it.
Yeah.
So even if you're deaf, sound could still a powerful enough sound could still have an effect on your body, even if you didn't see it. Because it's actually he doesn't realize this, but it's actually vibrations in the air.
Right. So it is a physical,
but it's invisible
property. Yeah.
It's invisible, but it still is a real thing that can impact you.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, like you can't see a taste, or you can't hear a smell, that kind of thing.
Thank God.
Unless you have synesthesia and then you can.
See, really so that's a real thing. Synesthesia is a real thing where your senses actually get crossed over.
Yeah.
That's so bizarre to me. Like, how could you see a sound?
They see colors when they hear.
My dad.
Or they taste when they hear.
My dad wrote a song about a woman he met with synesthesia, and the song is called, I believe, "The Color of Everything."
Interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think he spent some time with her, and she was an incredible musician. I wonder if that, like, I've heard that people with synesthesia, I don't even know if I'm saying it right, with that condition are usually talented in some sort of art form.
I don't know. They probably like have some crazy ideas that normal people wouldn't be able to get because of all the different ways their senses play around. It depends if they're able to convey that to people who haven't experienced it before.
I think I've experienced it on a small level, again, with the help of some heavy psychedelics, but mushrooms, I've definitely like heard birds chirping and then seen some sort of correlative hallucination to the sound. But I don't know if that's the same thing.
Yeah, could be like a temporary kind.
Hmm.
Anyway, moving on. So he has this this idea that if all that exists is body and void, then body itself also must exist of body and void. And you can't destroy everything into nothing, so there must be a limit to the destruction that you can do. And in both cases, that would be you can't. There's pure void, have nothing in it, and a voidless body, which is a body that has no void. So pure void, void with no body, voidless body, body with no void.
Does I'm going to take it. No, but I'll take your word for it. Okay, let me try and summon more of my brain power. All right. Say it again, quick.
Okay. So everything that exists must be a compound of body and void.
Okay.
But you can't destroy anything into nothing. So there's a limit to how much you can destroy body or void.
Right.
And this limit would be called pure void, quote unquote pure void, which would be a void with no body in it, and a voidless body, which is a body with no void.
Okay, I did it. I got it.
Okay. So, a voidless body. What is this? This is Lucrece. They call this the atom. And in Greek, it means uncuttable.
Okay. It's crazy that they figured out that atoms were real that far ago, like that long ago.
Yeah, they had no microscope or anything. Nothing. Didn't even know about fly eggs, but they hypothesized the atom.
Yeah.
Not only did they hypothesize the atom, Epicurus also hypothesized that atoms, you can't divide them, but they are made of minimal parts.
So,
which is mind-blowing because that's particle physics.
Crazy. It's crazy if you just think of things logically for long enough that you can come.
My headphones got pulled out.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Wow. Here I was starting to think that you really turned a corner in your professionalism.
Okay. They're back in. So that's really interesting. And the reason they thought of that was because if there's no variation between the atoms, then there would be no like way to explain all the different properties of things.
Mm-hmm.
So there must be different kinds of atoms with different parts. So it's like they've straight up guessed at particle physics, which is amazing.
Great guy. I need to get a bus to him. Fuck you. Fuck Epicurus. You, Marcus Aurelius. I'm going to be so I'm going to be surrounded by bust in here soon.
Yeah, ironically, the Epicureans were the big rivals of the Stoics.
Really?
I think they were rival schools, yeah.
Interesting.
Very, very similar ideas, but they arrived at them through very different...
Well, I'll tell you right now, I'm understanding this one a lot easier.
Yeah, Stoicism's weird. anyhow, so if as if that wasn't enough that they predicted particle physics, they almost, in a sense, predicted quantum physics as well.
The quantum.
And this is the idea they called the swerve.
Oh, the I like
swerve
that.
Swerve of the atoms.
Swerve, baby.
So this is what Lucretius says. He says atoms, I mean, I don't know how they know all this, but he says atoms, they move at this absolutely ludicrous speed through pure void. He said they're faster than light. Interesting.
Hmm.
But he thinks that basically...
How do you come to that conclusion without science? Like, I don't get it.
So here's the
faster than light. They knew about light speed too?
No, because atoms are not faster than light. So he's wrong about this. But in principle, he's correct, I think.
But electrons are, right?
No.
I mean, they're not faster, but they're
light in void is the cosmic speed limit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you say so?
It is.
Yeah, it sounds like some bullshit, but whatever.
There are ways that you could have something moving in a medium faster than light would move in the medium. That is possible.
Whoa.
But in a pure void, light is the fastest.
Damn it. Undefeated.
Wow. But here's why he thought that. He thought that light is from fire. He basically thought light is a kind of fire. And fire must be a compound of atoms. And so when it moves, it must be slower because the compound of atoms are all jostling each other. And so they'll be slower.
Right.
Pure atoms that are moving in the void. That's it. But here's this idea of the swerve. So, and they bring in the swerve because they think the atoms are all moving in parallel. Like the atoms all move in the same direction and they're never going to collide with each other. So if they're always moving in the same direction and not colliding with each other, then they can never form into the bodies that we can see and interact with.
Right. They need to be able to clump up, right?
Right. Yes. So what makes them move and bump into each other? Well, it can't just, if they're all moving in the same direction, then it can't be that they collide with something because they're all moving in the same direction. So the only way that they could collide would be as if they spontaneously swerved into each other. And that is the swerve.
And is that true? Is that like the weak nuclear force at play here? I'm just throwing out terms. I have no idea what I'm talking about, but.
Well, it's not like the weak nuclear force. It's more like a quantum indeterminacy.
Oh yeah. That was literally what I was going to say next. So. Oh,
okay. And yeah. And Lucretius jumps from this idea of the swerve to a solution to the problem of determinism. So determinism, of course, is this idea that like we're talking about atoms, their movement is always predictable. Then in a sense, the future is determined already.
Right. If you know all the locations of every single atom and their motion at a given point, you can predict what the universe will look like millions of years later if you have all that data.
Right. And if there's no swerve, then there's no possibility for voluntary action. Because your atoms are just, they're doing what they're going to do. And what they're going to do is determined by the other atoms that bump into them, not by what you decide.
I'm fine with the illusion of free will, okay? I'm totally fine with that.
You're a compatibilist, right?
I don't know.
could very well be.
Yeah. Lucretius, I think not a compatibilist. And he thinks this swerve, this ability for the individual atoms to suddenly move on their own accord is what allows for us to have voluntary actions. Somehow the brain, the body of void and atoms, whatever, is able to use this swerve to escape from causal determinism. And then
free will is really just a fucking burden when you think about it. It's a lot of responsibility. It's much easier to think everything is already set in place and you just do what you do and whatever happens was always going to happen. And if you think that you're making changes, those changes were going to be made anyways. So I like that better. I don't want to be responsible for fucking up my free will. So I'm much more comfortable with the idea of everything being laid out already.
Yeah, here's what you are. You have free will in the sense that you are able to do what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't choose what you want to do.
No. I am merely tricked by the universe into thinking I know what I want, but it's already everything that I've done in my life was a reaction to something else that happened. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. You don't believe in the swerve.
I don't know if I got that swerve in me.
Man, you got to have swerve. Got to have that swerve.
You got to have swerve. Dun, dun,
dun, dun. Lucretius would have put out some great beats, I think.
You think so? You get that vibe from him?
Actually, no. You realize he's not a very partying kind of guy, I don't think.
Well, you got to be practical. Since when did you have to be hardcore partier to make good beats?
All musicians are nuts and like to party, right?
I mean, it definitely seems to be the norm.
Maybe like Hans Zimmer doesn't seem like he does anything.
Dude, that guy is doing really intense psychedelics. He's doing mescaline. Mescaline and DMT wrote the Dune soundtrack. By the way, on a side note here, which is the only type of notes I really do, I went to see Dune with my wife and my sister-in-law and her boyfriend, and we sat at the back of the theater. And I realized partway through that because we were in the very, very last row, the speakers, we were behind the speakers for the theater.
So it's quiet.
So the sound was like not clear and muffled. I was like, oh, it was such a shame because sound design in that movie was insane. But oh well.
That's terrible. Don't go to that theater or don't sit at the back row of that.
I won't go to that theater again. The theater with the recliners. It is easily the best game in town for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So what did we just finish? Oh, swerving. Yeah, the swerve. We did the swerve. Okay. Yeah, so maybe now's a good time. We can leave the atoms, the world of the atoms, and we can look a little bit at his idea of... this is an interesting idea of the soul. Lucretius argues that the soul is... just a biological part of your body.
Interesting. So he could point out where it resides, theoretically?
That's a great point that you bring up. Epicurus thought the soul... I think they thought the soul was in the heart, I believe. And
which
then,
side? Which half?
Which... Oh, you mean like the Platonic, the tripartite soul? Is that what you mean? Or
no, I meant which chamber in the heart?
Oh, no, the whole heart. The whole heart. But later they discovered nerves or like neurons, I guess. Early Greek surgeons discovered neurons come from the brain. And so their location of the soul changed after Epicurus. But Lucretius still... put out what Epicurus had said, which is that it's in the heart. Even though by the time Lucretius was writing, I think Romans would have thought that the head was where the soul is.
Nowadays, all the hippies would say it's in the pineal gland. I think
that's what Descartes said. Descartes said that.
Really?
Yeah, he believed the soul was in the pineal gland. Yeah.
Pineal, and that's where the third eye came from, or was that something that people kind of just threw in there? Pineal gland is an endocrine gland located in the posterior aspect of the cranial fossa in the brain. Its importance is in the circadian cycle of sleep and wakefulness. Well, mine's probably fucked.
Pineal gland. Yeah, you don't have one.
Yeah, mine's missing.
Yours is gone.
That's my only birth defect. The pineal gland is also known as the epiphysis cerebri. And interest, epiphysis. Is that anything to do with this boy, with our boy here, Epicurus?
No.
The gland is pine cone shaped. Pine cone, 0.8 centimeters. Interesting.
Yeah, so Lucretius thought the soul is just part of your body. It does not survive after you die. Once you're dead, you are dead. There's no existence.
What's the fun of believing in a soul if it doesn't live on?
Well, he is trying to get rid of these problems that people have because they think there's an afterlife. They think there's a pre-life.
I know, but like, what is the function of a soul if it just dies with the body?
It's keeping you in harmony, I guess. Hold on. Maybe he says some more about it. Okay, here we go. Quote, initiates movement, imparts it to breath and air to move the body. The humoral idiosyncrasy, Okay. It's a weird, to explain that we'd have to get all into how the ancient Greeks understood the biology or human physiology, which is weird.
Okay. Well, I don't
have all these weird ideas about humors and bile levels and stuff.
Yeah, you have you have lung cancer, and it's because your humors are out of line.
Your humors are out of line, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So they probably thought
funny about that, if you ask me.
<Ba-dum-ching>.
Where's my freaking drop?
Yeah, hang come on. Sorry. All right. So, okay, then book four. This is an interesting book because this is where he introduces the idea of simulacra. And so this is how he explains how you're able to see things. So this is, again, really interesting because he understands that in order to see something, it's not like magic. There must be some action on your eyes from the thing that you're seeing in order to perceive it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, there has we know it's contact light, of some sort, right? We know it's the light, but... That's so, yeah, life was weird back before science.
Yeah, so this is, so he has like his explanation of how you're able to see something is that he says all atoms, like all bodies, they're always giving off something called a simulacra. And this is like, the quote here is an atomic film. If you can imagine that, like a one atom thick hologram of you, like coming off of your body in all directions at all times at enormous speeds.
I mean, it's not that different than light coming off my body.
That's a good point. You could think of it exactly like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this hits our eyes, and this is what allows us to see things. And it's interesting. We can skip ahead a bit here. When he introduces the gods, he says that the gods are, they don't have a physical body. They are just simulacra.
Oh.
They're so fine. They are just a simulacra. So fine.
Swerving.
Indeed. And indeed, it is this, like, they are so fine and different from us that they are just so far above anything that we would do. They're just not interested.
Yeah, that's how that was my experience with them for sure. Beings of all power, but no actual corporeal form.
Wow, maybe Lucretius was on something.
Yeah, I'm sure he was. He had that good shit. Some of these insights, I feel like, man, to have these insights as just straight sober is like That's wild to me.
Mm-hmm.
Alcohol doesn't bring in any like kind of insight about the world for me anyways. Weed does, but nothing does it like a good mushroom trip.
Mm-hmm. And it's pretty widely speculated that the Athenians partook of some kind of very powerful hallucinogen in their religious rites. So it's very possible that a lot of these ideas came from them taking psychedelics. It's totally possible.
That's what we need to re-inject into our religions and Western culture is psychedelics. I mean, I'm sure that's what they were very integral for most religions that humanity has had. We've gotten away from that. It's really sad, actually. Imagine going to church and doing like, you know, gram and a half of dried psilocybin mushroom. How much more intense that worship would be.
I mean, I think that's literally what religion used to be.
Yeah, that's what I think too. And it was probably a lot more fun.
Yeah. But yeah, we have to come up with these gods that care about us. Anyway, Lucretius thinks this is all ludicrous, that gods would care about us. And one big reason that I think he doesn't care about the gods is he has no belief that that we exist to serve a purpose or anything like that. And he has an interesting argument for that. Like, for example, your body, right? He doesn't think any part of your body is designed to have a particular job. And the key word there is designed.
Right. Okay. Designed for a particular job, as in like your hand would have like its main function was to like pick apples or some shit.
Right.
Is that what he's talking about? Or is he talking about it wasn't even supposed to be grip?
Anything. Yeah. Any purpose. And here's his point. This is an interesting argument. And he says, whenever something is designed for a purpose, then the purpose already existed before the object. And his example is a cup exists for drinking. And the need for drinking exists before the cup. A bed exists for sleeping, and the need to sleep exists before the bed.
Right.
But, for example, sight.
Could you imagine if someone invented a bed and that's how sleeping was invented? Like, look what I made. What are you going to, I don't know. I'm just going to lay in it for a bit, see what happens. First person to ever sleep.
First person to sleep. This is incredible.
Whoa, I feel fucking so invigorated. We should do that every night.
So exactly. There's no seeing. There was no seeing before there were eyes. So eyes were not designed to see.
There was no seeing before there was eyes. That's pretty good.
It's pretty interesting, right?
Pretty not bad.
And so he has this, he does not see anything in terms of like being built for a purpose. And this definitely influences his idea of the gods. So here's some things that he says about the gods. He's not saying the gods don't exist. He's very much saying they do exist. But here he says a bunch of things to refute what most people would think about the gods. He's saying they don't live in the world. They didn't create the world. And even if they did, they definitely didn't make it for us.
I mean, this guy's spitting fire. He really is. He's hitting for me.
Yeah. And he's saying like, look, the world, they designed the world for us. And he's like, the world sucks. Like we can barely survive here.
Why does this guy remind me of Caleb Campbell?
Yeah, he's like, why are there so many like bugs and annoying animals and stuff?
Well, he's got a point. Like if it was designed for us, they really could have done a better job.
Yeah, that's a great point. And he thinks that basically our world is not from any sort of quote unquote intelligent design, but instead it sort of just randomly worked out from the accumulation of atoms swerving into each other. And so he's sounds like a fully modern person.
He does. He sounds like he has modern sensibilities about these things.
Yeah, it's really remarkable that like you have to go back, because after him, right, like all of these ideas that he has here, even at the time, these were against what people had thought before.
Mm-hmm.
And then after him, right, like after this brief moment of the Roman Empire when it's not a Christian empire, after that, all those ideas come back and dominate again for 2,000 years until now, when Lucretius is sort of, these kind of ideas, Lucretian ideas, are kind of bubbling up a bit more.
Yeah, because I was thinking, how is this guy not like murdered? Like, there must have been not a really strong belief in religion in his society, or like, you know, the state and the church and the state were separate, at least. Like, what was the domineering religion in the time?
Well, he's Roman, so it's the Roman religion, and it's at a time when religion's a lot different. Like the Romans in Lucretius's time, it was, they had this thing where they would deify emperors. So the Roman emperor would literally be deified, would like ascend to like God status.
God king.
Yeah. So they had like a very different idea of religion. But we remember like in like Socrates was executed for his religious blasphemy. But that was a few hundred years earlier. So times have changed. They're more progressive in Rome.
Yeah. That they're very progressive. I mean, these ideas are progressive. Even some in like some places now, this would seem like kind of radical ideas.
Oh yeah, it's straight up against creationism, completely against creationism.
Yeah, and it's kind of a fuck you, because it's like, yeah, they're gods. He's not like he's an atheist. He's just like, they just don't give a shit about us.
Yeah, it's so interesting that he says like they exist and everything. It's just they don't care about us and they don't really live here.
Well, I mean, I feel like even to this day is kind of a reasonable take on it. It's like, okay, I believe there might be kind of godlike beings out there are responsible in some way for the existence of the universe, but for them to be to give a shit about us is kind of laughable.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of like, it's like one step from just saying they don't exist. Like
they're absentee fathers, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess he doesn't want to go so far as to say they don't exist, because in their culture, the gods are like ubiquitous.
Well, it would have been harder to go full atheist back when there was really not much explanation for a lot of natural phenomena.
True. I mean, like he's giving, like his whole project is to say like, look, you can explain everything through just atoms and bodies and void bumping into each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the reason he doesn't go against it is because it is their history. Like their source of history are books like Homer and things like that, which they take to be literal history, because it was written long before living memory of anyone in ancient Greece or Rome. And that history included the gods running around all the time. So I think they really did believe in the gods. Just the debate was like, how powerful are they? And
so was he like, okay, what were the Roman gods? Like Jupiter? Was he like, yeah, Jupiter is a real being. It just, Jupiter doesn't give a shit about us. Or was he like, Jupiter is not even a real thing. We obviously invented it, but there are gods out there that exist. Or did he actually believe that the gods of Rome were the actual gods?
Oh, well, probably the gods of Rome, but he probably wouldn't have limited it to that. He probably would have allowed like gods from other cultures to exist as well.
I'll allow it.
They were a lot more polytheistic back then. They were fine to let you have your gods and they have their gods, and let's test it on the battlefield kind of thing.
I like every part of that besides the testing it on the battlefield part.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's conclude, I guess, because we're pretty much at the end. But this is like one of the big things Lucretius tries to do at the end is relieve the fear of death. The big goal of Epicurean philosophy is to relieve the fear of death.
Please, I need this.
Yeah. And there's lots of reasons there. Before Epicurus, there are plenty of reasons to fear death. A big one being, when you die, your soul is going to continue on. Is it going to be suffering after you die? that's a big reason to fear death.
Yeah, it would be. But I feel like they would have to ramp up the suffering every once in a while because you're just going to get used to shit.
Yeah, I guess the idea
is to start you out at max suffering. You got to have somewhere to escalate to.
Oh, sure. I'm sure they're quite good at it. Down in Hades.
Look, buddy, I think they know what they're doing down there.
Yeah. The Lord of Death, Hades, the brother of Poseidon and Zeus.
Yeah,
he's been at this for a while.
Yeah, he's not an amateur. This guy is a vet. He's a journeyman.
And other reasons that people at that time would have feared death would be reincarnation. It was followers of Socrates, Plato would believe you're going to be reincarnated. That was a big, like, you'd want to be reincarnated well.
That's not almost poorly. Scarier than hell. Hell is too ambiguous and vague. Mm. But being reincarnated as like a fucking rat living in a sewer, that's very real.
That's real. Yeah. And Lucretius says that, and Epicurus, their whole point is you don't need to be afraid of these things because your soul is not going to survive after you die. And some people would actually take that to be terrifying. Like, my soul isn't going to survive after I die. That's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
You try to imagine it and you can't.
Yeah.
But Epicurus has what's called the symmetry argument, which is a classic way to turn this fear around and make people realize that it's nothing. And that's just to say, like, look, the fearing what happens to you, fearing the nothingness after you die is the nothingness after you die, or the non-existence after you die, is no different from the non-existence before you were born.
Mm-hmm.
You have no fear of the non-existence before you were born. So you should have no fear of the non-existence after you die.
Yeah, I hear Alan Watts. Alan Watts would say that a lot, I feel like. I heard him say that.
That's Epicurus. And the real thing you should put, what you're really afraid of when you're afraid of dying, is that you're going to die before you've enjoyed your life sufficiently. And this is the big twist, is that Epicurus and the Epicureans are hedonists.
Damn. Okay.
Yeah.
So he's like, you got to eat, fuck, do what you want while you're alive, because you won't be able to, there's nothing after this.
Yes, but only to an extent, because Epicurus is he's a very careful hedonist.
Ah.
And he knows that he's a hedonist. He believes that pleasure is the good of life and suffering is the bad. And that a good life is one where you have more pleasure than suffering.
Mm-hmm.
But he thinks in order to achieve that ratio of more pleasure than suffering to like a good extent, you have to live, you can't live like a maniac. You have to take everything in moderation and be very.
That's what I've been saying.
Yeah, be very careful.
You can't just you can't just indulge in your vices willy-nilly, and that pleasure is we talked about this a few episodes ago, but there's a difference between the pleasure of like doing a bump of cocaine and the pleasure of seeing your child running through your backyard or something, right? They're both pleasures, but they're not the same.
Yes, exactly. And so basically their whole goal is to have pleasure but not to go crazy and experience frustration and all the stomach problems that come from too much wine and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So live carefully when you're suffering, focus on the good times of your life. And when you're in pain, just think about how it's going to be over soon. And that'll get you through pretty much anything, according to Epicurus.
Well, Epicurus, he's good. He's an absolute G in my book. I like everything about what you've been saying about him. Good stuff. I'm going to get an Epicurean bust up here. Chuck this piece of shit out of here. I don't know why. I thought that was all freaking hard for stoicism.
You should keep both.
All right, okay. I'll make them fight. Also, I'll make them stare at each other.
Because remember that Epicurus is a hedonist. And the Stoics are not. So there's a difference. There's a real tension there. That can be explored.
Well, I hope they come alive at night and beat the shit out of each other with just their heads. All right. Well, that's our episode. Thanks for listening. I'm going to go indulge in some more liquor.
All right. See ya.
Bye.
Philosopher's Stone.